The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Do you ever feel stuck on a hamster wheel, constantly running but getting nowhere? The secret is actually quite simple. When you fall in love with yourself, everything else falls into place. Personally and professionally. It's time to get unstuck, reclaim your personal power, and recapture your zest for living. Now, here's your host, Deborah Jane Wells.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening. This is Deborah Jane Wells. Thanks for tuning in to our show. Today's theme is Kiss Stress Goodbye and Make 2014 Your Year to Shine. Through my writing, speaking, radio show, and signature coaching programs, I help individuals and organizations learn to harness the transformative power of love to get unstuck and step into their greatness. When you choose to stop living as a victim of circumstance and fear-based limiting beliefs, and instead embrace the transformative power of loving yourself unconditionally, your experience shifts from breakdown to breakthrough. Choosing to fuel yourself with constructive core energy based in love, respect, curiosity, compassion, and gratitude produces a life of generous, effortless, gracious flow filled with faith, hope, prosperity, peace, and joy. Choosing love as your core energy changes everything: your perceptions, opportunities, relationships, and priorities. When love transforms your relationship with yourself, it can't help but transform your personal life, your work, and the world. This week, I am pleased to welcome back my guest, J.D. Messenger. J.D. is the award-winning author of the best-selling book, 11 Days in May, The Conversation That Will Change Your Life. He is a distinguished graduate of the United States Naval Academy, a former firefighter and nuclear submarine officer, a television and radio show creator, producer, and host, the Exxon executive who helped supervise the Valdez oil spill cleanup, and the former CEO of Ernst & Young Consulting, Singapore. Nominated for the CNBC Asian CEO of the Year, he has been called the CEO of Spirituality by Martha Stewart magazine, as he now applies his business acumen in the field of spirituality. For more information about JD's work in the world, visit jdmessenger.com. Welcome, J.D.
Hi, Deborah. How are you?
I'm great. It is great to have you back with me again today.
Well, it's good to be back.
So last week, we discussed your thoughts on reclaiming our power to create purpose and meaning by recognizing and removing the blocks that prevent us from becoming all we were meant to be. And in that show, you shared with us the combination of mental, physical, and spiritual techniques and tools you've perfected over your 12-year quest for answers. This week's conversation will shift from the micro to the macro level as we explore stress, what it is, what causes it, how it limits our lives, and the keys to kissing it goodbye so that 2014 can be our year to shine. So let's start by exploring what stress is. So if I asked you, J.D., what is stress? How would you define it?
I think, stress is the feeling we get when the outer world or our outer environment is inconsistent with the internal desire or expectation. So I'll say that again. I'm not saying it's good or not good. I'm not saying it is accurate or right. I am simply saying it is a condition created when there is an internal desire or expectation of something, somehow, somewhere, and the external environment we're in is inconsistent with that need or desire.
Yeah, I talk, that resonates for me. I talk about unmet expectations. You know, there are no bad outcomes. There are just outcomes that weren't what we anticipated or weren't what we were aiming for. And we tend to label such things. You know, if we think of the universe as not a benevolent place, then it makes sense to me, it's logical, that the unknown would be a source of fear because the preconceived notion is that it's likely to be painful, you know, hard, difficult. And we also, by the way, most of us are still operating under the illusion of control, particularly the control freaks among us. I have a tendency to go back there myself sometimes. And we forget that control is at best an illusion. And the only thing for which we are response able is our own response to whatever's going on. And by the way, all those filters and preconceived notions you and I talked about in the last episode, which in so many ways shape our perception of reality anyway. It's why, for example, to the person who loves golf, it's a delightful afternoon in nature. It's a time with friends. It's a thrilling and challenging, you know, opportunity to excel and learn and practice and achieve. And for others, it's a time to throw clubs down the fairway and swear. You know, it's just, yeah. There's nothing good about it. I tell a story about that in my book, about my teaching my son to play golf or learning to play golf with him. So, you know, that's really what it is. And there's a whole lot of stuff that happens in your body. And there are plenty of sources out there for those of you who are interested. You can Google it till the cows come home about the chemical and physical and psychological, emotional, you know, ramifications of when we experience something as stress, which means when we label it as bad, you know, not the thing we don't want, and the impacts that it has in our bodies and our minds and our hearts and souls. One of the things I love to talk about, JD, and especially with other teachers, you know, other spiritual teachers and leaders and empowerment coaches or whatever title we're using, is I'm always curious about what still pulls me off the path. You know, I have so many tools and so much stuff. You know, I joke and say I'm not a Zen mistress on a mountaintop, which someone suggested should be the title for my next book. So if you're willing, what category of things do you notice habitually still has the power to pull you off the path?
Well, anything that's stored in your cells that is a, you know, Dr. Phil would call them tapes. In the last show, I called them flops. There's, you know, our cells, and, you know, I bludgeon the science to death. My family even teases and jokes at me that I love science so much they call me a nerd. And, well, there's an example. You know, the first time they did that, it hurt. Right? Because what was that? There was an expectation in my mind that science is something I love. And when they called me being nerdy and they were playing and joking about it, what part of me was hurt? My ego, my mind. Right? And so, you know, I had to learn to laugh at myself. You know, who said laughing? Is it Buddha? Is it Gandhi? I mean, I think there's a lot of people that said when you laugh at yourself, then you're really kind of getting there. And so this one card I had gotten from them, which the first time I read it, you know, it was a birthday card, and it hurt my feelings. I kept that card, and I turned it into a joke because I knew that it was only my mind or ego that was creating that stressful reaction. So it's something stored inside you, your cells, and it could be, you know, since I believe we live many lives, it could be something from this lifetime. It could be something from another lifetime. But it could be something from our ancestors stored in our DNA. I mean, to make this point very clear, you know, we have over 100 trillion cells. Each one of those cells holds over a billion bits or documents of information. This has been scientifically proven. Each one of 100 trillion cells holds more information than the Library of Congress. So that means that every one of our ancestors and their memories and experiences, it's all stored in us. You know, this is why I think we see certain traits or attributes passed down from generation to generation, from generation to generation. It's like why we see things stereotypes. You know, African Americans are this, and Asians are that, and men are this, and women are that, and Christians are this, and Muslims are that. You know, I mean, this is what we do. So, you know, part of this complicated nature in us is that when something creates a stress, it could be a personal issue, it could be a family issue, it could be a historical ancestral issue, it could be a social issue. You see where I keep going? You know, this gets very deep. And so, you know, you have to find where some of these things lie. And, you know, I think about there is a well-known pastor who was railing against people, you know, homosexuals and lesbians. And as it turns out, he was one. And you know, this was, you know, so you say what caused him stress on that kind of reaction? You know, it was something that was happening at a social level, which was a deep personal issue that was a fight going on inside him. So at some level, to kind of simplify it back again, there's something internal with us, and it could come from any of a dozen sources, this time, this life, or others, and there is an inconsistent... you know, we don't like what we're experiencing in the environment, you know, relative to what that program or belief is.
Well, and to use your example of being your nerdiness, which, by the way, I love your nerdiness is one of your great gifts. When I introduced you in the last show, I said part of what makes working with you so especially delightful for me and insightful for me is that you take nuclear engineering and physics and math and all those things that we think of as incredibly nerdy, and you apply it to spirituality to give us new tools, new language, new metaphors that are going to reach a unique population. You're going to be able to touch the hearts and minds and souls of the nerdy crowd. Not just the nerdy crowd, but especially the nerdy crowd, in a way that others who may come from a different orientation, the woo-woo crowd, I'll call them. I've been called both, by the way. you know, that there is a tribe. I tell people all the time, I coach, you know, aspiring and emerging writers, authors, and I say to them, they say, well, you know, how could I compete with Wayne Dyer? How could I compete with your book or JD's or this person or that person or Louise Hay? And I say, well, first of all, you're not competing with anybody. We work on that mindset, that scarcity thing. But the second thing is, there's a tribe of people who are waiting for you. They've been waiting a long time, possibly, for you to share your gift, your voice, your words, your perspective, because even though I think Wayne Dyer stuff is fabulous and Louise Hayes is fabulous and Deepak and Don Miguel Ruiz and JD and Deborah and whatever, the reality is we won't reach those people. They're waiting for you.
So, you know, I love the way you said that, and because... it's so true, okay? And we all need to hear that and ingest that. I mean, ingest it. That thing that you think is wrong with you, okay, the nerdy scientist guy, you know, you are actually gifted with. And so the thing, if I could jump up and down and stamp my feet and pound the table and say, if you want to know who you are and why you're here, find the source of your greatest frustration or pain and turn it and look at it and realize that that is your blessing, your gift, your uniqueness. And I just love how you said that, that there are millions of people out there in your tiny little carved out space that actually are waiting for you to come out and share that or say that so that they can go, oh, thank God I'm not alone.
Well, and I can't come out and say that until I stop telling myself it's not okay to be me. I mean, it's why I go on and on about the unconditional self-love for every aspect, not just the stuff that we got A's for and got congratulated by our parents and our culture and our society, but the things that irritate me and everyone around me. I've got to embrace all of it and know that it's all part of the gift. And so my opportunity is to figure out, how does that wacky part fit? How does that part that I think, that appendix, you know, that organ that I'm not quite sure why it's there, how does it fit?
So now so, here's So if we take this the next step, excuse me for jumping over you, and every one of those listeners out there writes down the word inside on the left side, and then draws an arrow to the right and writes down the word outside, and then draws an arrow from the word outside to inside. So you got inside on the left and outside on the right and two little arrows, you know, like going, connecting, going in each direction. Then you make a list down each one and say, what is it on the inside that is causing me stress to what on the outside? Yeah. And which of those is, I'm trying to think of what's, help me, what's the right word? I don't want to say valid. I don't want to say right or wrong. Which one of those things
is a limiting belief?
Well,
I would call it a limiting belief.
It could be a limiting belief. It could be a fear. It could be a doubt. It could be a confusion. It could be a misconception or an illusion. Right. You know, it could be many, many things. I mean, let's take, for example, I mean, I just love talking about this one. I just think women should be priests, you know, because I think women are divine. And I talk about it all the time because, like, everybody seems to get it. Okay, so let's say you're a woman and you want to be a priest. And so the outside issue, there's nothing wrong with that. That's not a limiting belief. It's the outside world that has created an illusion that you can't be one. And there's nothing wrong with you.
But what I'd say is there are plenty of spiritual traditions, plenty of religious denominations where women can serve as ministers.
Right.
So maybe your internal limiting belief is that, and if we're using Catholicism as the example, you know, maybe your internal belief is you said, well, it won't count unless I'm a Catholic.
Well, maybe
your opportunity is to say, do you want to be a spiritual teacher or do you want to, you know, stick with one spiritual tradition and keep beating your head against the wall because really you're afraid to step into that greatness. So you're using the outside world as your excuse.
See, we just, I love what we just did because the inside person was saying, oh, I'm a Catholic and I'm a woman and I want to be a priest, but the outside world says I can't. But then you turned it around and say, wait a minute, you had an internal limiting belief that you were a Catholic woman. If you really believe in being a minister, then go out to the world and to a place where they accept women ministers.
And on that,
and poof,
major shift.
Stress is gone.
There you go. We're going to take a break and we'll be back in 2 minutes with more.
Inspired by today's show? Visit Deborah at djwlifecoach.com and click on the current offers tab to access her proven life coaching programs and tools. Everything from her signature workbooks and videos to entertaining and inspiring blogs and newsletters. You'll even have the opportunity to sign up for a 60-minute complimentary coaching session. If someone offered you a precious gift for an hour of your time, would you be interested? That's what Deborah offers in a comp session. It isn't a brief demo or sample. It's a full 45-minute coaching session focused on your current real-life challenges, plus 15 minutes to discuss any questions you may have about her approach. Those who've experienced Deborah's comp sessions will tell you that when you show up fully committed to your own growth and open to the possibilities for transformation, big breakthroughs happen. What have you got to lose other than your fears and limiting beliefs? Visit the current offers tab on djwlifecoach.com. Choose your energy and change your life.
What does creme de la creme mean? It's the greatness of living, the willingness to be the best. It's living beyond what you know is possible with no limitation. Access Consciousness presents Creme de la Creme, a program that empowers you to choose and create the life you would like to have and entices you into being who you are, not who others would have you be. It's the best of the best. It's the finer things in life. It's brilliant. It's fun. It's exciting. Join us for Creme de la Creme every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Remember what life was like when you were a kid? When you had that zest for living and discovery, that total lightness of being. Can you still experience that today? Listen to Joy Awareness Radio with host Marlene Bork. Our show will invite you to be happier, to enjoy living a more conscious and exciting life. Learn from our guests and contributors, just like you, and make this your weekly stop to rediscover the capacity that you could be accessing. Tune in every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
You are listening to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life with Deborah Jane Wells. If you have a question or comment for the program today, please call us toll-free at 888-346-9141. That's 888-346-9141. Or you may send an email to Deborah at djwlifecoach.com. Now, back to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life.
Hi, everyone. This is Deborah again. Welcome back to our show with my guest, the fabulous J.D. Messenger. In the previous segment, we discussed stress, what it is, what causes it, how it limits our lives, and what we can begin to do about it by shifting our thinking. In this next segment, we're going to talk about how stress, and one of my favorites, perfectionism, shows up both personally and professionally, and I'm going to start by sharing some very personal, specific ways that stress and limiting beliefs still show up in my life because they fit really well in talking about this. So, one of the areas, relationships. And by the way, relationships aren't just personal. There's professional relationships and the kinds of relationship things, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything. So, usually the stuff that shows up in your marriage, shows up at work, shows up in your personal relationships, your friendships. So I find one of the things that I can still choose to create stress for myself over, so notice my language there, is when I perceive one of my loved ones is in danger. And it doesn't have to be, you know, they're going to be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. It could be anything I would think of as not optimal for their life, which, by the way, right away, you can feel there's a little interference energy going on there. So I know that I tend to get pulled off center by that. I catch that. So JD, when I say that, what would you tell me about relationships? What's your thought?
I have to tell you.
But you have to limit your answer to no more than 3 minutes now.
Okay. Well, I was laughing, okay, because one of these shaman who, you know, these people, when you do what we do, you know, people contact us and all that. And this one, I couldn't believe that you picked the saber-toothed tiger. Okay, so I was over here laughing because this one shaman person called me up and told me that my most powerful animal totem was a saber-toothed tiger.
Well, there you go. There you go. We're in sync once again.
Let me say this. Whenever we are comparing ourselves to someone or something, which is a natural thing to do in Western society. I don't think it is a natural thing to do, quote unquote. I think it is a conditioned thing to do. But whenever we are comparing ourselves, we have a standard. What has happened? It's like, you know, we've got a column A and a column B, or maybe a column C as well, and there's a standard established somewhere in our mind, which is always going to be an artificial standard, you know, whether we're talking the 5-minute mile, the 4.5-minute mile, the 4-minute mile, or whether we're talking about our hair or our weight or how well we write or speak, whatever it is, there's a standard that has been established and there are columns that are being compared. And so whenever we are doing a comparison, we are going to find ourselves probably in a bad situation. We're either going to find ourselves below the standard that we think is where we should be, and therefore we diminish our self-esteem, we become critical of ourselves, or we find ourselves above the standard and we, you know, self-aggrandize, we puff our chests, aren't I good, aren't I smart, and so it's the ego and the mind. So in any case, when we are doing the comparison with a standard, I think it is a not good situation. It's almost a lose-lose situation. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And one of the things about relationships, I think it was M. Scott Peck who talked about marriage in particular. He said, you know, people wouldn't still get married if they didn't want the friction. And if you think of the friction as like the sand in the shell of the oyster that makes the pearl, they want the pearl. They don't think of it that way once they get in there. Their relationships are there as loving mirrors. They're an opportunity to recognize and transform any vestiges of unexamined fear within ourselves and thereby, you know, become an even clearer channel for love and light at all times in all situations. Now, one of the ways it shows up in this example of, you know, my human or loved one, it doesn't even have to be a human one, you know how I am for cats and I know how you are for your dog, that there's a huge difference between making respectful suggestions, as in, here's something that's worked in my life, you know, you can feel the energy around that, it's very detached, and versus disrespectful interference. And the big difference is that when I get really attached to how quickly you implement my suggestion and how well you do it or whether you do it at all, then the odds are good that I'm no longer in this place of respectful suggestions. I'm in the place of disrespectful interference when, oh, by the way, my fuel went from being love to being one of four of fear's ugly cousins, which are anxiety, self-doubt, avoidance, and arrogance. And I'll quickly describe those. You know, anxiety is just what I said. You know, it's, oh, my God, my beloved husband is at risk. I can't be happy and safe and all of your favorite mantras. You know, I can't be healthy, happy, and whole if someone I love might not, you know, might be at risk. Therefore, I want my anxiety to stop. So I want him to do with his life what I would do to make my anxiety stop. The second one is interesting. It's self-doubt. And that is, I'm not really all that confident about the choices I've made in my life. And what helps me is if everyone else makes those choices too, then I start to feel like maybe I know what I'm doing. So that's an energy that can often be under the, I need you to live your life my way. The third one is what I call avoidance, which is, oh, by the way, there's something in my own life that really bears some looking at, but I'm not ready to do it yet. And so I'm going to distract myself by fixing it in your life, or frankly, fixing anything else I find in your life, rather than dealing with the stuff that is actually mine to deal with. And then the fourth one is arrogance. The idea that unique creature that you are, unique being that I am, that I have not lived 1 minute, not walked 1 foot of your journey, and yet I would think that I know better than you do how you should be living your life.
Yeah, I mean, what makes you think that they're at risk?
Yeah, that's right. Everything's an opportunity, so how do I know that him experiencing whatever he's going to experience, which I might label as painful, a failure, whatever, I mean, honey, I got my biggest insights from beating my head against the wall and running on that hamster wheel. And it's what has helped me now find my greatest joy and help other people find their version of their greatest joy.
Well, and, you know, there's an unstated, there's quite a few actually, but there's an unstated assumption here that needs to be borne out. And that is when I do my coaching, one of the things that I use that I found to be the most powerful tool is a numerology program, which I bought license rights to. And so I print out an individual's, I call it their soul plan. You know, we joke and say God didn't give us the instruction manual. Well, I think he did. And it's these full numerology profiles. And what I have found is that I can compare people, and so after I work on an individual, I work on their spouses or children, and there are tools that allow me to compare them. And so, you know, let's say person A and person B should be highly compatible, and they might be on the verge of getting a divorce for one out of 10 things that is the incompatible part. And then I'll see a couple, and I'll go, man, these people should be probably getting a divorce, or I don't even know why they're married because they got like 2 out of 10 things which are compatible. And I'll find out that they're happily married and have been for 20 years. And so you say, why? What is it? And so what it is that the people that are happy, first of all, there is no such thing as a perfect relationship. It doesn't exist. Okay, that meaning it's not like all of the cards were stacked, 52, 52, perfect match. No, no. It's that however many matches there are, you know, 50 out of 52 or 2 out of 52, that perfect relationship has learned a mutual respect for each for that individual person to let them be who they are and do what they want to do and let them have their independence or their freedom, respect them for their knowledge, their gifts, and, you know, not judging it or some, you know, and not trying to make them me. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the difference. I mean, all of the ones that are highly compatible and they're having difficulty, it's because one of them is trying, person A is trying to make person B be like person A wants them to be.
Right.
That's the problem.
So the compatible couples are celebrating the matches and respecting and both laughing about the mismatches. So, you know, yeah. there's a respectful humor that can take place in a relationship where we laugh about our nerdiness and we laugh about our, you know, whatever it is, our woo-ness, and we laugh about our whatever labels they put on us, a little bit of a control freak nature that comes up here and there. And then the ability to just say who he is and what he loves has nothing to do with who I am and what I love. It has nothing to do with my because my worth, his worth is intrinsic. It's divinely sourced. It has, my worth cannot be elevated or reduced based on anything about how he's doing, whether he's happy, whether he's sad, whether he makes a lot of money, whether he makes nothing, whether, you know, whether he's thrilled with the decisions I'm making, whether he's not, whether he, it has nothing to do with who I am and how I am, unless, of course, I choose to have it be run by that.
I have to think about that one a little more. It has nothing to do with who I am or how I am. Meaning like whether I like wine or beer, you know, and right. He likes wine or beer. It has nothing to do with the wine or the beer.
Well, it has nothing to do with whether I am any safer than I thought I was before, any smarter than I was thought I was before, any better than I thought I was. But, you know, a lot of times what happens is we don't feel safe. You've talked about that before. We don't feel safe. And we think, oh, if he lives his life my way, then it'll be much more predictable for me. I'll feel safer. Or life will be more predictable, I believe. I'll be safer. Or, gee, if my husband made more money or had a different kind of job, he'll be more respected. Therefore, I'll have a husband who's more respected, so I'll be more respected. And it's like, no, no.
Yeah, right.
You
yeah.
are you. And he is who he is, and your self-worth and his self-worth have nothing to do with what either of you do, think, vote, how you vote, what you believe, you know, who's vegan, who's not. It's not.
Yeah. This is another really, really big topic, like the first one. We had, I think, some major aha on the inside-outside stress. And so to say it a little differently, the compatibility of a relationship, the strength, the duration has nothing to do with, you know, how much money you make, how great the sex is, whether she plays golf or he plays golf or you drink wine or like dancing or any of those things. And I know that people are going to say that sounds really strange. And the reason I'm saying it is because out of the many, many people I've coached and counseled, all of those people that had all these things stacked up and might have been compatible because they did all the same things, were some of them were getting divorces because of the one little thing. You know, he rolls the toothpaste up in the at the end, and the other one squeezes the toothpaste in the middle, and I just can't take it anymore. I'm like, give me a freaking break, right? You know what I'm saying? Or the flip side, where there's nothing compatible, and so it has to do with, I call it a soul relationship. You have recognized and respected that person for being who and what they are, and you are not judging it, valuing it, putting, you know, in any sense of the way, you know, dollar value or otherwise. And you are mature enough to recognize that there is not going to be another person out there who is perfect in all ways. I mean, I've seen this one guy, this one client, this guy married and divorced the same woman 5 times. Like, what is going on here? Like, did he didn't get that it was him. You know what I'm saying?
Funny.
He didn't get that all the things that he kept projecting onto her was him constantly trying to change her. And the funny thing was, they were very compatible. You see, he just had this, and the source of all of these issues, every single one of them, is the mind. It is the mind. It is the attachments, the senses, the 5 senses, hear, feel, taste, sense, you know, that is the source of all of the pain and suffering. And the heart doesn't do that. And so if you want to have a great relationship, get connected at a soul or heart level. And that doesn't mean love level. Okay, I'm talking soul level. That's a different, you know, there's multiple kinds of love, because I'm really big on sex is not love and love is not sex, because so many people are so confused about that one.
Well, and as we go into our next break, you know, for me, I talk about relationships that are grounded in love, and I mean that in all caps, in the way you mean it, that love, when my core energy is constructive and it's based in love, respect, curiosity, compassion, and gratitude, see, that's the fuel, I think, that's underneath those relationships, not just under the relationship, but in the individuals. So we are going to stop there. Take a quick 2-minute break, and we'll be back with more.
Want more positivity in your life? Are you ready to get healthy, happy, and energized? Join the Stella Donna Goddess Gals, Cynthia Bryan and Heather Brittany, for a power hour of stimulating, supportive conversation on Star Style, Be the Star You Are. A lineup of best-selling authors, celebrities, and experts. Join the effervescent mother-daughter dynamic duo in this upbeat, positive, life-changing talk radio playground. Star Style, Be the Star You Are, Wednesdays, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Lend us your ears. It's power time.
Inspired by today's show? Visit Deborah at djwlifecoach.com and click on the Current Offers tab to access her proven life coaching programs and tools. Everything from her signature workbooks and videos to entertaining and inspiring blogs and newsletters. You'll even have the opportunity to sign up for a 60-minute complimentary coaching session. If someone offered you a precious gift for an hour of your time, would you be interested? That's what Deborah offers in a comp session. It isn't a brief demo or sample. It's a full 45-minute coaching session focused on your current real-life challenges, plus 15 minutes to discuss any questions you may have about her approach. Those who've experienced Deborah's comp sessions will tell you that when you show up fully committed to your own growth and open to the possibilities for transformation, big breakthroughs happen. What have you got to lose other than your fears and limiting beliefs? Visit the Current Offers tab on djwlifecoach.com. Choose your energy and change your life. Which voice do you hear? The voice of your ego or the voice of your spirit? The one you listen to can determine your entire future, your decisions, your existence. Listen to Two Voices with Dr. Nick and Reverend Linda Martin. We'll identify, discover, and explore your two voices and help you to determine how they shape your life. It's an experience which can allow you to transform your ego, hear the voice of spirit more clearly, and create the life you were meant to live. Two Voices is heard Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Empowerment. You are listening to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life with Deborah Jane Wells. If you have a question or comment for the program today, please call us toll-free at 888-346-9141. That's 888-346-9141. Or you may send an email to Deborah at djwlifecoach.com. Now,
back to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life.
Hi, Deborah here. Welcome back to our show with my guest, J.D. Messenger. In the first two segments, J.D. and I examined the origins and nature of stress and how it shows up in relationship expectations. In this final segment of today's show, we're going to take a closer look at how stress can show up in organizations and what we can do about it. And if we've got some time, we'll share some tools along the way. So one of the things that I love to say is that substantive, sustainable organization transformation always begins with each individual being fully committed to personal transformation. That there is no, you know, someone who for many years was an organization transformation consultant, you know, I saw time and time again that, you know, you kept trying to change the container, but the contents, the individuals in the organization weren't on individual journeys of recommitment. And then they wondered why the change result was lackluster or didn't last very long. So, JD, I know you spent a lot of time in that world as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, once again, you've sort of beautifully posed something that I'm not sure I've thought about in this context I've always known that all meaningful and lasting change begins within the individual before it is projected out. And as it relates to an organization transformation, I know from having studied many and done many and then researched those that worked that the number one management axiom for change has to come from the leader, and that leader has to have established a positive future state vision that is, you know, compelling and pulling people forward. So the other thing I know, I'm talking this one through out loud here, is that all change and growth has tension. There is no motion without friction. You know, if there was no friction on the bottom of your shoes, you wouldn't go anywhere. If your tires were spinning in ice, you wouldn't go anywhere. So there is no growth without tension and friction. And in fact, those organizations that avoid the, I'll use the word stress, meaning the market conditions are pulling them and they want to resist it, they go bankrupt. You know, Borders ignored Amazon and Netflix, Blockbusters ignored Netflix. You know, you can't resist market forces, otherwise you will die. And so since an organization is a collection of individuals, I think what we're talking about really is the collective values and beliefs of that organization, which we call culture. So to long-winded answer, and I think my short answer to your question then is that in order for an organization to survive, there must be a positive tension, and all that positive tension must create growth, but it must be managed in a positive, inspirational, future state manner, not based on fear, control, or punishment.
Or scarcity.
Yeah.
You know, fear, scarcity being one of the, you know, sort of scarcity-based greed.
Yeah. We're back to the head versus the heart, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the leader, you know, the best kind of leader you can have in an organization is one who marries personal power with institutional power. Now, I mean, a leader by definition is an individual who has followers. That's it. You can take all that stuff from, you know, Harvard, and with all due respect, a leader is a person who has followers, and they follow for one of two reasons, either fear or desire. That's it. Now, there are many great leaders who are really bad leaders. Hitler was a great leader. He was a great bad leader. You can't question the fact that the man had many, many followers.
Yeah.
So by definition, he was a great leader. But he did it from the head out of control and fear,
yeah,
as opposed to other great leaders who are inspirational and positive and uplifting, like Gandhi, who did it from the heart. And so, but in either case, there's always, you know, tension. So you could call that stress, if you want. In this situation, I would say those that create the tension from the head, it's stressful and fearful and painful. And those that create the growth from the heart, it's a positive pull.
Well, and there's one of the things I hear in there, there's a creative tension. That's a term that's often referred to, that part of how anything new or appearing to be new comes into being is that there's some kind of tension in the system. The system may be you individually, mm-hmm. yeah. the organization, that says whatever we have right now, as lovely as it may be, we just feel like there's something even more.
Or,
you know, there's something even better.
It's not going to last.
Right.
I know it's not going to last, and so I want to help change because it's not going to last.
And often the person, the individual or individuals who are the first, it's like I'm reminded of the emperor's new clothes. That was the metaphor that came up for me. It's like the person who raises their hand and says, "Excuse me, sir, but you're naked and ugly." You know, that person, in organizations that thrive, that kind of creative tension and the questioning of what could be or what is, they find a way to encourage the respectful communication of it and be able to relax into, what do you mean I can't keep selling books exactly the way I've been doing it for hundreds of years or decades, or, you know, what do you mean I can't keep renting movies the way I was, you know, and, you know, what do you mean there might be another way? And that kind of spirit is celebrated. The person who says, well, what if we tried this and what if we did that? And recognizing, you know, part of why diverse work teams, and research shows this over and over, diverse, respectful, diverse work teams get better results. Disrespectful teams, whether they're homogeneous or diverse, aren't going to do so great either. But respectful, diverse work teams, diverse organizations, diverse skill sets and gifts and perspectives and backgrounds and, you know, yeah, they get, because they can see more possibilities.
I would argue to my last breath that the essence of what we are talking about is spirituality, is that the essence of these great leaders, we have used words and called them management principles or leadership principles, but they're far bigger than that. They are universal axioms that people are naturally migrate to or are motivated by people who are inspired from their heart. People that are promoting good, that are promoting growth, that are promoting happiness and a positive future state, that this is all energy. And in fact, I believe, because I have written things that, you know, I am still deciphering, meaning it kind of channeled or came through me, that this is the essence of the universe, that this is the essence of God, that these axioms, that these principles about love and growth and helping each other, being a part of community, you know, that there's a certain core set of values, and they are embedded in every major religion or faith or philosophy that has been written in all times. You know what I'm trying to say?
Oh yeah. Yeah, they're not. You think you said in our last show that there isn't a new message. There are just new ways to say it.
Yeah,
and those new ways are valuable and matter.
If I jump to current day, that one of the reasons we are having so many challenges and problems in our society, in our country today, and, you know, we talk about inequality, we talk about the huge corporate profits, we talk about the number of people suffering, is because the major corporate leaders have lost this moral rudder. that they have been focusing on thinking that the purpose of a company is to please shareholders and make profits, and that is not true. The purpose of a company and any organization or institution or association or church is to add value to society. It is to add value to the individuals, value to the employees, value to the community. And in the case of a private corporation or public corporation, the outcome is to make money. That is the outcome of fulfilling their purpose. And most of those organizations have lost focus on their purpose for being. And that is why we are having such a great tension taking place in society.
So how do you think we can get ourselves back on track?
I think that the leaders of all associations, organizations, and institutions that believe in the I'm going to call it the high road, the moral road. They need to start standing behind their values and beliefs in business, in politics, in the community. You know, you can't go to church on Sunday and hang up your hat and go to work on Monday and be incongruent. You know, one of the things, I've got many friends who are Muslims. And I love my Muslim friends because they are unbelievably devout in what they practice and pray, you know, 5 or 7 times a day, and how they apply it in their daily lives. They are totally congruent with their spiritual values, which, you know, if you've studied Christianity and Islam, you realize they come from the same source, Abraham, and they have the same core values. And so I love that. I love that.
Well, and reminding yourself of your core values 5 to 7 times a day will do that to you.
It will.
It's part of why affirmations work so well.
But I got to say, I at least once a week, I've got a Christian friend who says, geez, I wish all of my Christian friends had more Christian values when it came to business, because that guy I sit next to in church just tried stabbing me in the back, I mean, we got to stop doing this. We just have to stop doing that. We have to become congruent.
You talked in our last show together, and maybe it was in this one as well. It's all starting to blur now, about the fact that we're all part of, the way I describe it, all part of one organism. In other words, when you take a cell and look at it under a microscope, some fluid from the human body, it looks like those cells are distinct. But we know, in fact, that those cells are part of something that makes up a circulatory system, and then a leg, and then an arm, and then a heart, and then a person. So it doesn't take, it's not too much of a leap for me to say.
They're timeless. They're billions of years old.
Yeah. And they're made of stardust. They're made of the atmospheric stuff. And then it's not too much of a leap for me to say, well, if I could take the God's eye view, that's that thing when the camera goes the way, way, way back, and we get a bigger and bigger and bigger, bigger image. Yeah. What if we're all one organism anyway? So, oh, by the way, when I stab you in the back, I'm just stabbing myself, the organism, in some other part of its entity. But oh, by the way, it's like the butterfly effect. It will have a ripple effect on me. I may not know what it is. I may not remember when it shows up that it's connected, but it doesn't mean that it's not.
So the main message is that separation is an illusion. Yeah. Separation at a physical level, in terms of energy, air, oxygen, we're all the same energy, air, oxygen, the same. Separation at a biological level, all humans are 99.999% the same DNA, so that is an illusion. Separation at a thought level, at a separation level, at a supply chain level. I mean, just carry it on, spend a couple hours talking about it, and you'll realize that we are not separate at all. We are totally codependent, co-creating, biologically, physically, a part of one system. And we need, and anyone who is promoting division and separation of the system and the people is not someone that is doing you a favor.
So we've got 2 minutes actually, we've got, yes, 2 minutes to just wrap it up. So separation is an illusion. Oh, by the way, we don't have time to do it today, but separation, the illusion of separation, is also a cause of much of the stress we choose to perpetuate in our lives. So bring it on home with a final minute for our listeners, JD.
I like where you were just going. I think the idea that stress is a bad thing is not necessarily true if we think of stress as a positive tension, as an indicator, and that indicator is telling you something, whether it's in your family, your personal life, or a relationship or an organization. Think of the stress as an indicator for something that needs to be changed, for an opportunity for positive growth, either within you, your relationship, or your organization, and do that inside-outside analysis. What is the internal issue, and what is the external environmental issue that is creating this tension, and what is it that I need to shift? You know, we basically did this as organizational consultants. We called it market forces and things like that. But what is that internal issue viewpoint that needs to shift, or and how is that projected out into the environment? And so how do I change the environment? And so between changing the environment and the internal issue, the tension or stress grows away, and you now have positive growth.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can say that again.
There you have it.
It's a good thing this is recorded.
Fortunately, it's recorded. JD, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. You were wonderful, as always.
Well, thank you. It's a blessing. Happy New Year. I look forward to whatever we do together in the future.
As do I. And thanks again to my incredible Voice America production team that keeps me on track and makes this show possible. Today marks the one-year anniversary of my presence as a weekly talk radio host on Voice America's Empowerment Channel. It's been an amazing and fulfilling 52-episode journey. I am grateful to everyone who made it possible, from my executive producer, Randall Libero, to the many engineers who've guided me technologically, to the many listeners across the globe who've taken the time to share with me how my shows and guests have made a difference in their lives. After today's episode, I'll be taking a break from broadcasting new weekly radio episodes on Voice America for a bit. This will provide me the breathing room to invest my professional energy in other modalities, including more public speaking, webinars, publishing articles, writing a second book, ad hoc interviews with authors and thought leaders, and other types of audio, video, and live programs. I've established free internet distribution platforms with iTunes and TuneIn.com, so you'll still have access to all of my archived Voice America show recordings, along with the new audio and video programs I'll be releasing regularly. For details on accessing this and other opportunity-expanding, life-affirming content, visit my website at djwlifecoach.com. When you explore my site, you'll find more information about upcoming programs in the nature of life coaching, with opportunities to listen to recordings of past episodes, purchase my book, subscribe to my social media feeds, and sign up for special offers to guide you on your journey to wholeness. You can even request a 60-minute complimentary coaching session with me. This is Deborah Jane Wells signing off for now. Thanks again for listening. Remember, when you fall in love with yourself, everything else falls into place, personally and professionally. You are loved and loving, blessed and a blessing. And so it is. Namaste. Blessed be.
Thanks again for listening to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life. Please rejoin your host, Deborah Jane Wells, again next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's time to get off that hamster wheel and start fulfilling your destiny by creating a life you love.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.